Hey, everybody, and welcome to Learning from Smart People. My guest today is Jen Abel. She is a thought leader in business-to-business sales, advising both startups and Fortune 500 companies on testing new commercial models. She has been featured as a co-host and speaker for brands including Condé Nast Glamour, General Assembly, Techstars, and Boulder Startup Week. Jen, welcome to the show.
Rob, thanks so much for having me. I'm excited to be here.
Yeah, so tell me a little bit then. You're advising these companies, you're working in business-to-business sales. I'm a startup, I'm an entrepreneur, I'm a single, I'm a solopreneur. So tell me a little bit about the wisdom that you have to share with small organizations like my speaking company.
Absolutely. So when it comes to, entrepreneurship, I think sales is one of those, what's the best way to say it? Sales is one of those skills that everyone cringes around, right? They think it's slick, it's sleazy, and everyone wants to just delegate it to somebody else. But in fact, sales is one of the most beautiful things that I think everyone needs to get excited by and understand, because really what you're doing is you're connecting somebody with a problem today to a solution tomorrow. So we love sales, we embrace sales, and we always like to tell entrepreneurs and founders, do not be afraid of sales. Sales is actually the most powerful tool you have in your toolkit.
Very interesting to hear you say that, because I would imagine that in some ways, as an entrepreneur, you are selling your product, your service, whatever it is, you're selling your brand, but you're selling yourself as the solution. Am I properly summing that up?
Yes. So that's exactly right. So we launched Jellyfish, which is our business, about 4 years ago. We've worked with 50 different B2B and enterprise founders, specifically with two key milestones. One is, how do I expand my company, being in an international market, into the US? And the second is, I'm a US company, but how do I get those first 2 to 3 sales to begin to show traction to my market, to my investors, and more broadly to the team? So we are that first boots on the ground to embed alongside founders and really help them navigate their point to what we call early product market fit.
Okay. It seems very straightforward and very simple. And yet some of the language that you use, like a straightforward market fit. Is that what you said?
Sorry, product market fit.
A product market fit. What is it? Can you define that in simple terms for me, so I make sure that I understand exactly what you're talking about?
Sure. So product market fit means you've developed a solution that the market is hungry and excited by. And what I mean by that is they are willing to pay for your solution and give you money. So product market fit means someone is willing to have an exchange of value with you, where you're providing them their solution and they're providing you with monetary funds for it.
Okay, so in other contexts, I've heard this kind of as the pain and relief concept, or the itch and the scratch concept, where you're helping them. Are you helping them to see where the itch is that you scratch, or are you developing the scratch? Which comes first, the itch or the scratch? Does that make sense?
Absolutely. I think the itch comes first, because you have to know where to scratch, right? So We work with founders to help them validate the problem that they're solving for. So they've built a product. In the startup world, there's a term called jobs to be done, which is someone will only be willing to pay for something if it's going to accomplish a very specific job that they are incentivized to solve for, right? So what we do is we work with founders to make sure that the way they're positioning their product is directly aligned to an immediate pain or problem the market is feeling. So what we are doing is basically saying, let's identify where that itch is so that we can sell them essentially the scratch, right? That solution of we are the best person to do this because we know your pain better than you do.
Okay. It makes sense in those terms. And I guess then the next step for me is, are you finding out what the itch is and then you're developing the scratch? How do you then make sure that you're in the right market, that you're doing the right or have the right people as your target audience or your target market so that it matches up with the skill set that you have to be able to fit into what their needs are and to be the solution to their problem?
It's a great question, and one that I think many founders overlook, right? Because most founders typically are product and engineering centric. They're great at building a solution, but they do it in a vacuum, right? They don't go out and necessarily talk to customers at first. Maybe they spoke to one or two and then they spend a year building this product or solution because that's what they feel most comfortable doing. That's where their skill sets and their core capabilities live. Most founders are not commercially oriented. So what we do is say, listen, you've now built this product. You've now raised, you know, $1 million or $2 million to go out to the market and prove traction. Where do you start? And what we like to say is you have to be super specific with whom you're going after and the problem you're solving. Because the only way to convince someone is if you're able to speak to the pain or the problem better than they personally understand it. So we say, you know, who do you want to go out and learn from? Pick a specific role within an organization. So say it's the CMO, okay? Why would the CMO be interested in taking a call with you? What specifically are you doing for them that you know they're feeling today? What pain is that? But more importantly, why would they be inspired to take a call with you today to learn more about the solution, right? What comes before sales is just inspiration. Can you even inspire someone to want to have a conversation? And I think the biggest mistake folks make is they go out and they try and sell this solution to the market, when in reality, all you want to do is sell a conversation, right? Because in those conversations, that's when you learn. That's when you will deeply understand what inspired them to take a call, what pain they're feeling, how they're incentivized in solving it, how much of it is a priority. But more importantly, do they even have the risk tolerance to be your early adopter? Because as an entrepreneur, you need people that are willing to see the value in what you're doing, because you most likely don't have a tremendous amount of mature references you can point to, right? So how do you show someone, listen, the reward is going to far outweigh the risk of working with this person, knowing they're going to be one of the first two early adopting customers?
As an entrepreneur, I'm relating to what you're saying, that I'm really good at developing a solution. So I have a speaking business, right? I'm a speaker. That's what I do. However, sales isn't one of my skill sets. I didn't get into what I'm doing today because I'm a good salesperson. What are your suggestions for people who are saying, like, I've got the scratch for the itch. I've got the relief for the pain, but I developed that. My skill set isn't in sales.
Sure. So, you know, all it comes down to, all sales is, when you boil it down to a very specific thing, it's someone that understands what someone means versus what they say, right? It's being able to read in between the lines, and it's being able to determine, yes, this person said this, but I think what they really meant is this, right? Because when you're in the position that you're in, Rob, you know what your listeners might be craving better than they can articulate it, right? So it's being able to understand the questions to ask, to know when to go deeper, but more importantly, to understand, you know, and I think everyone refers to the Steve Jobs, no one was asking for an iPhone, right? But what Steve Jobs realized is people didn't want to have fragmented solutions everywhere. They wanted something that they could hold in their hand, right? So it's all about understanding how do you drill down from, you know, all of the things around, you know, what people are saying, and how do you whittle it to a point of, this is what I think you're saying, and this is what I think you mean. Is this correct? And that's how you really build trust. Because when someone's willing to play back something better than you can state it, it's a really, really powerful thing.
That's awesome. The idea of listening for what people mean as you hear what they say. And in some ways, the example you used of Steve Jobs, I also think about the legend of how FedEx got started with overnight package delivery, and the initial reaction in some in the marketplace was like, why would people need something next day? Things are delivered very fast. And it's seeing that pain point that sometimes there are things that need to go quickly. And now FedEx has not just become a leader in that market, but they become kind of the Kleenex and Jell-O of where you talk about FedExing something, even if you're not sending it by FedEx, the brand name has become an action or a verb. You know, that's really cool. And let me just ask this right now, are you finding that even in the middle of a pandemic, when there are school shutdowns and business shutdowns and people are locked down and working from home, are the same concepts still holding true?
I think more so than ever, Rob, meaning businesses are going through transformations that what would take 10 years, they're doing it in a matter of 10 months, right? People and retailers who had all of these retail shops are now moving their entire business model into this e-commerce world, right? And selling direct to consumers. And I think that there's something extremely interesting going on right now where the way that people used to work and the processes they had may not be even relevant anymore to today. So there is a massive window of opportunity for people to go in and serve these truly net new needs or primary needs where the secondary jobs are shifting. So for example, you know, you have a team. The team used to all come into the office. Now everyone's distributed. What's the mode of communication? Is it email? Is it using a tool like Slack? How are folks supposed to be making decisions today? What does that cadence look like? How are they managed? Right? There's so much change going on with COVID and how businesses are operating, and then more importantly, their expectations of their employees. And I think when you're selling to large businesses, process is everything. And the entire process that most of these businesses have set up has been completely disrupted. So as someone as an entrepreneur who can go in and actually solve some of these itches and these pains, now is the time to actually learn, because I've never seen a window of opportunity like this in decades. So what a really exciting time to potentially go out and learn from the market and solve some of these net new problems they've never faced before.
Yeah, I love the idea. And let me just, from my own personal perspective, when I was 21, had a spinal cord injury, and what I had to learn from that is the way that I engage the world changes. But the basic structure of human needs, the basic structure of who I am and what the world needs doesn't change. All that changes is the way that I'm engaging it. And I think that really that's a little bit about what's going on here today with the pandemic. Yeah, the end result, the end need hasn't necessarily changed. The way that people engage, the way that products are distributed, the way that things happen is different, but the end goal is still the same. Am I properly understanding that?
Yeah, that's exactly right. The pain might still be there, but the way you solve that pain might have evolved dramatically, right? So it's like, you know, we still need to be able to host things, on a server, but the way you distribute it through cloud, right, that's a totally different mode and process, but it's solving the same problem, which is storage, right? And the pain of how do we store these files? Well, we don't necessarily need to store them on servers anymore. We can now store them in the cloud. So I couldn't agree with you. In terms of the job to be done is fairly static, but the way to solve it is continually evolving.
Yeah, and I think about, there are a lot of people that I talk to that are kind of the opinion, like, I can't wait for this to be over, and we just get to flip the switch and we go back to doing things how we used to do things. And I would be curious to get your take. Are we going to go back to doing things that Are we going to go back to doing things the way that we used to do them? Or are we in just a new paradigm altogether and we need to change the way that we're looking at the future?
I think we're in a new paradigm altogether. I mean, being able to work from home has been something that I think truthfully has, I mean, our business has actually been fully distributed for the past 4 years. And I think it took this pandemic and this health crisis for people to realize, well, wait a second, our employees are just as effective, if not more effective, working from home than they were working in the office. And I think it just takes that evidence to prove, hey, let's try this. Let's open up to this new way of working. And I think more importantly, it's something very interesting is going on where people used to hire talent close by, localized, right? You're a New York company. You typically hire New York talent. Now you can be a company incorporated in New York State, but you can be hiring from cities, you know, all over the country and getting talent maybe at less of a premium than you would if you had to pay for these first rate, you know, New York, San Francisco salaries. So I think there's something very interesting going on about the opening up of the floodgates into this opening up of talent where you have access to talent that you never used to have. And I think that's going to solve and create new pains, right? Now you have more resumes to go through and more people to vet, but you now have more optionality in terms of how you solve things. So it's extremely interesting what's going on and how these past 6 months have accelerated the thinking of so many leaders.
It is so interesting to hear you say that, and the idea that what is going on now is just expanding opportunities and expanding really the talent pool that's available for employment across the country and really in some ways around the world. And one of the other areas, obviously as a person with a disability, I'm very passionate about employment for people with disabilities. And you don't have to worry about accessibility. You don't have to, if an individual with a disability is working from home, you don't have to retrofit your office. You don't. It's basically a win-win situation all around.
It is a win-win situation all around, and it allows for that level of diversity, which is incredible. That was much harder to maintain.
Yeah, and yet in that, I think, and I'm just throwing this out there for anyone who's listening, who's thinking about starting a business and needs a niche. I wonder about the niche of creating the work/home shift so that, because when I am working from home, my hours, it's not just 40 hours a week, right? It's much harder to limit that. And if somebody's looking for something, you know, just to help people be able to define the lines to say, okay, I'm on the clock doing office, you know, company work, and now there's a definitive line that I can draw to say, now I am no longer on company time and I just need to be able to get away from work. Does that make sense to you?
It does make sense. And I think people, the level of flexibility has completely evolved in terms of working hours, in terms of where you're working. I think you're spot on. I think this is going to unleash maybe a new set of, like, kind of what, you know, Uber has done and created and allowed people to create their own hours. I think this is going to go far beyond, you know, Uber and what they've proven out. I think a lot of businesses are definitely going to be testing out these new waters for sure, especially if it benefits them and their employees.
Excellent. So as people are working on building their business, what are the things that they should be looking at to kind of determine if they're doing the right thing, if they're in the right market, if they're scratching the right itch, if they're finding the right customers? Like, what should they be looking at to see that they're doing the right thing with their business?
It's a great question. Obviously, a lot of investors and a lot of folks they simply ask, well, what's your revenue? How's your revenue how's your revenue evolving and growing? And I think revenue is interestingly a lagging indicator. And some of the most leading indicators that business owners and founders can begin to look at is, am I able to inspire someone to even just take a call with me regarding the problem statement I listed in my email? Am I able to get a head nod on that initial discussion with that potential buyer of, yes, this is a pain I have, and yes, I'm interested in learning more? Are you able to get them on that second call? These are all extremely strong indicators that you are on the right track. And I think revenue, yes, certainly is that exchange of value that is critical to make someone a customer. That happens sometimes if you're selling, you know, six-figure deals. That happens 6 or 9 months down the line. But what about those first 2 months out in this new market, in this new world that COVID has created? How do you make sure you're still on the pulse and down the right track? And it's simply just, are you able to capture someone's time? Are you able to keep it? And are you able to advance it? And I think those things are so critical to look at and understanding those conversion rates to understand, are you on the mark? Do you need to adjust slightly? And I think people overcomplicate it and overlook at it and try to add more tools and throw more bodies at it. But it's simple as, can you even get someone on a call? And have you inspired them to a second call?
It's very interesting what you're saying. And I'm wondering, you're kind of developing this skill of listening to people and hearing what is not being said in the words that they're saying, hearing what their meaning is through what they're saying. I'm assuming that that's something that is not going to just be limited to the work that you do for your business, but that's going to be something that's going to be beneficial in the bigger picture of living your life.
That's 100% correct. With your family, with your friends, becoming a better person, and just listening and understanding where someone is coming from. Right? I think we're in a very trying time right now with politics, and it's hard to even joke around, right? I think people are, you know, we're all in our homes. We're all a little bit, you know, cooped up, and there's a lot of tension going on in the world. And I think just listening and hearing what someone has to say and just saying, I hear you, just as simple as that. I understand. Mm-hmm. I hear where you're coming from. I understand what you're saying. It's just such a simple concept, and everyone tries to come back with an answer. Oh, let me explain to you why I feel this way. Sometimes it doesn't even matter. Sometimes someone just wants to be heard and understood.
Yeah. I have a friend, and his thing is you've got to meet people where they are. And so when you're talking to folks and you're asking them about what they're feeling, what they're thinking, and then being willing to listen. And even if you don't agree or you feel like they're coming from a wrong place, to acknowledge that this is your feeling, and as such, I acknowledge it, it has value, and that's where the foundation of the relationship starts. It is so true. And the other piece that you mentioned in there that I think about is, years ago, I used to listen with the intent of, okay, I have to formulate what I will say in response to this. And so sometimes I was just listening so that I would learn, I would be able to have something to say back. And many times that's not what it's, well, no, pretty much all the time. It's not about what you say. It's about acknowledging people for where they are and just saying, as you said, I hear you, or I understand you, or I feel your pain, whatever the expression is, to be able to just give validity to the thoughts that they're expressing. I think that's what you're saying, right?
That's exactly what I'm saying. And even a simple sales trick that I always suggest using is, replay back what you heard from somebody. Hey, I just want to hear, just want to replay back the what you said over the past 5 minutes. Is it correct to assume these three things that you mentioned? People love to hear that they've been heard. And more importantly, if you can replay it back and you do this actually really well, Rob, in one or two sentences, and someone to give you the head nod, yes, that is what I was saying. It's a super powerful thing.
Yeah, but okay, here's just a quick background story on me, Inez. I've got a master's degree in psychology. So one of the things that I learned during my counseling class was to listen, and then just to reiterate, to make sure that people feel like you're listening to them and you hear where they're coming from. Jen, this has been a fantastic conversation. If people are looking to find you and get more information about you, what's your contact information? Where are you on the web and so on?
Yeah, the best place to message directly one-on-one is on LinkedIn. Just Jen Abel plus Jellyfish with two J's. I'm also on Twitter at @JEN_Abel. So either of those two channels, I'm very responsive on.
Wonderful. I will make sure and put those in the show notes so that anyone who's looking for you can make that contact. Listen, we are now at my favorite part of the show. You have definitely established that you are smart. I have learned from you, but now it's just time to establish your personhood. And we've got three questions to establish your humanity. Are you ready for these, Jen?
I'm ready, Rob.
Okay. So what is a perfect day for you?
Well, to be honest, it is getting out, 72 degree weather, to be precise. We're actually entering it. The leaves are changing. It's fall. And I'm able to get in 18 holes of golf with my husband.
Amazing. My son just discovered golf, like maybe within the last 4 months. And he is an addict. And he's 18 years old, and he's pretty sure that if with a little bit of practice, he might be able to make the tour. I say to him, more power to you, but that's a steep climb.
It's a very humbling sport.
Yes. I think somebody, was it Mark Twain that described it? That it's a beautiful walk through nature spoiled by a little white ball. next question is, do you sing in the shower?
Absolutely.
And what do you sing? Are you singing show tunes in the shower?
I'm singing 80s hits, a lot of Madonna.
Okay, you and I are of similar spirits. The 80s music is my go-to music. All right, last thing, and that is, what is your favorite kind of candy?
So I know that this is going to sound pretty odd to most people, but I love really sharp licorice, meaning that old school licorice taste. I love Good and Plenty. I love licorice pastels. Absolutely love licorice. The stuff that you find in the old candy stores, not the new age stuff.
It's really, my father-in-law loves licorice as well. And yet licorice has always been vilified somehow, because if you ever played Candyland, like Lord Licorice, he was the bad guy, I think, right?
He was.
Yeah, because everybody knows that licorice is like the least favorite. When you go to the theater, there's always Good and Plenty available, because everyone buys the Good and Fruity, but yeah, the Good and Plenty can go by the board. Listen, Jen, I appreciate you being on. I appreciate you sharing. I hope that folks do get in touch with you. And listen, it's been wonderful. You are indeed a smart person. For all my listeners, I will remind you, as always, that when you stop learning, you stop living. Have a great day, everybody.